too. Board games aren't just for Christmas. For many of us, sitting down with family and friends to play a board game is a Christmas tradition. In his latest book, Norwich author Tim Clare explores how playing games is a fundamental part of being human and why we should do it more.
If board games for you means dusting off Trivial Pursuit on a rainy family holiday or being thrashed at Scrabble by your parents after Sunday lunch, or even succumbing to the younger family members' desire to play Monopoly at Christmas because they haven't learned yet how long and tedious it can be, then you're missing a treat, says the writer and games enthusiast Tim Clare. The past 25 years have seen a revolution in exciting, ingenious, imaginative and fun games, he says, and they're offering all the things we're craving in terms of slowing down, putting down the mobile phone, spending quality time with people we love. All these things are solved with games. There's nothing wrong with returning to old favourites, battered boxes of Buckaroo, Cluedo, or the Game of Life, when handed down the generations, they come with all sorts of memories attached. But there's a huge number of new games being produced each year, and they're easy to pick up, despite what we might have heard about spending hours learning complicated rules. I can explain an entire game to you in 20 seconds, Tim says. Games like Timeline, where each card has an historical event on one side and the date on the other. When the cards are placed down, players need to guess in what order they happened. For example, was the UK Postal Service introduced earlier than houses having door numbers? There's a fast and silly card game called Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. Or there's Flip 7, which is like blackjack. Ticket to Ride is really just Rummy with trains, where you're laying down little train tracks. And Wits and Wagers is a trivia game where you don't need any general knowledge because the answers are numerical and you bet on which answer you think is closest. My daughter won that game against adults when she was 6, he says. Tim reviews around 500 games each month for magazines such as Tabletop Gaming and Senet, as well as writing for national newspapers such as The Guardian. He attends conventions and exhibitions which attract huge numbers of participants. This summer's Gen Con in Indianapolis saw its biggest attendance yet, with 72,000 people visiting on the first day. He visits libraries and cafes which offer games for people to try in a relaxed and informal setting, and he engages with communities who share his passion and enthusiasm. On the face of it, games seem pointless, he says. You're not accomplishing anything or doing anything practical, but people love getting around tables and playing board games. There's a clear hunger and delight in that. For Tim himself, games are central in his life, something he looks forward to each week, he says. But he's always felt a certain level of embarrassment and guilt at caring so passionately about something commonly considered a childish pursuit. So he decided to write a book about the subject to see if others felt the same way. He spoke to academics studying the subject, to sociologists, linguists, psychologists, philosophers, even archaeologists. And board games became a window into how people have spent their time from 2,500 years ago. Called The Game Changers, the book describes how the throw of a dice would determine your fate if convicted of a crime, and playing cards in the war could hide messages for spies and enable prisoners to escape. He goes on to highlight that although games are considered valuable because they can improve our creativity, numeracy, diplomatic skills, problem-solving abilities, or protect against mental breakdown, their true worth is in the fact that they enable us to have fun, to play. I think we live in a society where we're conditioned to value ourselves in terms of how much money we can make for the economy, what our productivity is. He says, the news will continually report on how the economy's doing, on job creation, but we rarely talk about happiness. Even adverts for children's toys rarely mention fun, Tim says. Instead, they stress how the toy aids cognitive development, social skills, and spatial awareness. The purpose of play is to optimize our children for the workplace, not to make them happy. What a sad way to start, he says. Even with pensioners playing bridge or mahjong, we talk about the powerful neuroprotective effect rather than human beings who just like playing games. There's this idea that a game for game's sake, that fun and joy and enjoyment and community are not worthwhile. As a journalist, Tim says he's been as guilty as anyone of writing articles highlighting the benefits of playing games. But actually, we like playing games because it's a fundamental activity of being human. He points to Finland, considered the happiest country in the world. On a recent visit to Helsinki, Tim played chess in the city library. They've got loads of what they call third spaces, communal areas where people can meet for free and play games. Has this something to do with Finland being a happy nation? Games are a lovely way to spend time with friends and family, he says. It's actually quite low stress. Not everyone needs to participate. You can play a trivia game where Nan is just watching a bit of TV while you're playing. The game can be happening ambiently, with others still present in the room. And what is a jigsaw but a big cooperative game? At Christmas, you can leave it on the table, and every member of the family can walk past and maybe just add one piece. In talking to members of different board game communities, Tim was surprised to find that something so inherently social as playing a board game was so popular with neurodivergent people. Maybe the reason it works for them points to something larger about why it works for all of us. I asked some autistic people to talk to me about what they enjoyed about playing games, and a few of them very gently asked if I had ever considered being autistic myself. He was rather put out at the question, but thought it would make good content for the book if he went to be assessed. They said I was the most fantastically autistic person they'd ever assessed, he says. The result thrust Tim into a confidence crisis, he says, with him thinking that he had been boring people all his life. And this despite having a successful career as a performance poet, comedian, and musician. He ran a London comedy gig called Homework for many years, only stopping in recent times in order to be at home with his family in Norwich. Live performance was amazing and vital. You're doing something ephemeral, which will never happen again. You can be playful, and you can engage with people. When it was going well, it was like nothing else, and there's something very thrilling about that space. But I'll always choose a tummy raspberry from my toddler, he says. Being told that he was autistic meant that Tim could understand his past and current behaviours more clearly. He says, I'm not an oppressed minority, but some stuff is harder for me. I'm 44 and I can't tie my shoelaces. I can't read an analog clock, but I read more than 1,000 research papers on neuroscience for my last book. I'm not stupid and I'm not lazy, but there are things I find very difficult, and it can sometimes present as grumpiness or being difficult or inattentive. But he thinks it's also given him permission to feel happy about the thing that he loves. Like games, the fact that I'm 44 and still really like Pokemon. And he's less awkward about admitting that games are very important to him. They bring me joy, he says. And one of the things as we, as autistic people, are good at embracing is our enthusiasm. Not great if you get stuck next to us on a bus or in an elevator and we get started on our favourite topic, but in terms of creating a permission structure, I think all of society could benefit. He's currently working on a book on the subject. The world has largely been shaped by non-autistic people, but I think we've got something we might be able to teach normal people. Life's a bit too short to hide the things you love. So, give games a try, he says. You'd think it was absurd, someone saying they didn't like music because they'd switched on the radio once and didn't like what was playing. The Game Changers is published by Canongate, priced at £10.99.